Mini episode 67 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by the Pullins Group, delivering public affairs consulting and marketing services for small businesses trying to grow. Follow them on the web at PullinsGroup.com.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Okay, another great mini-episode of the FDH Lounge coming back at you, celebrating our fifth anniversary of the lounge here today, January 14th, 2012. With original dignitary Chris Galloway and Ken Detweiler, who actually predates the FDH Lounge altogether as far as our association. Ken and I working together years ago at the Sports Talk Network. Ken, I know that you've always been interested in doing this here with this show. It is the show where nothing's off topic. Chris and I have taken part in many political analyses over the course of the show here, so this is your first time to come in here and do this with us, so I'm very much looking forward to this.
Thanks for having me.
Let me start then on that. Let me get your thoughts. The Republicans heading into South Carolina a week from today, coming off of New Hampshire and Iowa before that. I certainly, the most among the three of us, find a tremendous amount to bemoan out of that as the Republican Party tries to shove the turd known as Mitt Romney down everyone's throats and appears to be succeeding thus far. We're not having the gag reflex, if you will, from the American public that we need to at this point, or at least the Republican electorate in those states. Everybody says if he does it again in South Carolina, it's over a week from today, and a lot of people think it may be anyway. So how do you see it going into that?
Well, I think he's going to win South Carolina, and I believe that he's going to be the nominee. For good, bad, or indifferent, I think we're trading, as you mentioned, a turd. I think we're trading poop for manure with all the people we've presented. As Chris mentioned off the air, 25% he's taken this everywhere he goes, and that's good enough to win. So there's not a lot of choices out there, unfortunately, and that really saddens me in a lot of ways that this is all we can put together
as a
Republican Party.
He went well above that in New Hampshire, about 40%. The caveat being that that is one of many states where he owns a mansion that is the size of a small village.
That's his
backyard,
right.
So he's actually a part-time resident of New Hampshire, so almost a favorite son kind of a thing. So I think you do have to put that asterisk on it, Ken.
Yep, I do. Like I said, it saddens me. I don't see anything fresh out there. I don't see a difference maker. If you're going to challenge Obama and the Democrats, you've got to have something that's going to set you apart, I feel, and give people a choice, and I don't see it.
No, I don't either. Chris, I know you're a little more sanguine about the possibilities here than Ken and I, even if that's not saying a whole lot.
Well, I think right now the general election is a coin flip. I know there's a lot of Republicans that think that, you know, they can put up a bar of soap and they're going to beat the president. I've never believed that. I think they're, from what I've understood, you know, people like Rubio and some of these other people that didn't get in the race, it's because they're not convinced that Obama can be defeated. Guys like Rubio are saying they don't want to be on the ticket, and I've understood from internals that folks that I've talked to out of Florida that's in large part because he's not convinced that Obama can be beaten, and he's so young that he doesn't want to be on a losing ticket. And so there's still a lot of Republicans, I think, on the inside that are looking at things and saying they're not convinced that this guy can be beaten. And so I think right now it's about a 50-50 proposition. It might be more of a 45% proposition for Republicans in terms of beating the president. So, there's no doubt that this is an overall a pretty lackluster field of candidates, which has allowed Romney to rise to the top because he had the organization in place from a national standpoint from 4 years ago, because he had 4 years of fundraising, he had the resources. That's allowing him, because of structure and money, to be able to outlast the others. And it appears in South Carolina that he will win. And that'll close the door on this nomination process. Not that it'll be over with. It'll drag out. probably through Super Tuesday, but I mean, for all intents and purposes, it'll be over after South Carolina.
And Mitt Romney, of course, in the course of that campaign 4 years ago, a campaign which never stopped in actuality, if you look at the man, his pathetic protestations notwithstanding, has managed to garner the approval, as it were, of every county chairman in the country here. It's the same fat, bespeckled, used car salesman, corpulent one in every county in America, and they're all for Mitt Romney, and they're all jamming about everybody.
I think Rob Frost, who is a young, handsome fellow in Cuyahoga County and in great shape, would probably take...
How did they not get somebody from Central Casting?
I think he would take great umbrage with that. Not all county chairmen
They're not all
that
guy?
Making. No, okay. They're not all that guy.
Okay, well, just 99% of them, then. They're the 99%.
But I do have to put a shout-out to my good friend Andy Manning, who is the Portage County Republican Party chairman. And every time I see him, he points out that he goes, "I look at my stomach, I'm getting fatter." He goes, "Yeah, that's how you know I'm a chairman." He goes, "Look at all of us." So there's a big shout out to my good friend Andy Manning, who's a great guy and doing a great job down there. But he always jokes about the same thing. You know, he says, "Boy, every time I put on another 5 pounds," he goes, "I know I'm a chairman because I look like all the rest of us."
That is hilarious. Well, I want to circle to something you said here. I really want to put some credence and belief in this. This is the first I heard of it. Marco Rubio, that this isn't just a bluff, that he's not going to be on the ticket? Because I've been hearing this, just the media saying it's a done deal. I am hopeful that he will not be, because the most measured, reasoned thing I can say about the man's foreign policy is the term bloodthirsty warmonger. I'm sorry, I can't be any more measured and reasoned than that, but this is a guy that thought we should have bombed Iran like 3 years ago. So you're telling me he may not be on the ticket, and that's for real?
I'm telling you my prediction is he will not be on the ticket.
Psych.
I think it's going to be for two reasons. One, his own pullback in terms of his not being convinced that he is... That Obama can be defeated, and the other half of it is, I think from a strategic standpoint, it's going to be Portman, because Romney is going to need to carry Ohio, and I think Ohio will probably be more in play in some respects than Florida, and so Portman's going to become a very popular politician in Ohio, will become very important to Romney in terms of carrying Ohio and sort of extending the fight out.
Rob Portman. So the theory
My
is...
My prediction at this point is it will be Romney and Portman.
Okay.
Romney-Portman ticket.
So so Mitt Romney, in so doing, will find a politician capable of matching his extreme level of charisma on the stump there. Somebody who can be, you know, just coming through the TV screen just as he does, getting Rob Portman.
Listen, your knocks at Rob Portman aside, I will say that Rob Portman is the real definition of a gentleman and a statesman, and this country would be really, really lucky to have him on the ticket and involved at the national level.
I already asked you about this when you mentioned him last time around. You said you don't think Bush trade rep is going to be something that's going to be able to be hung around him in a general election.
No, because these things don't ever, as you know, don't become about vice presidents. No matter how every ticket desperately tries to say this guy or gal that I'm putting on the ticket's going to totally redefine and add all this energy or all this whatever, it's always, at the end of the day, 97% about the guy at the top of the ticket, not about the Joe Biden in slot two.
Okay.
And so what is right, you know, I've always been a belief, I'm a traditionalist. I believe when you're picking a guy to put on the ticket or a gal, you know, you don't get any of that other stuff that everybody always thinks they get, okay? Whether it's, you know, I'm bringing Palin on because I'm going to get all the young conservatives, I'm going to get all the soccer moms excited. Didn't happen. You know, I'm a believer is in vice president, get a state that you need or expand the map and take one out of the other column. To me, that is more likely the only thing that you're ever going to get out of your vice presidential candidate is votes on a map or an expansion of the map. From either side, they all try to outthink the process and think, I can get a guy, you know, who's going to expand the map and also bring in this Democrat. No. The only thing you're pretty much guaranteed that a VP is going to get you is a state.
Well, wait a
so
minute.
So choose wisely.
Wait a minute. Obama did the same thing as McCain. He was going to carry Delaware anyways, but are you saying that that's the exception to the rule because he needed to get somebody to pose as the wise Washington hand for the inexperienced young guy? Well, are you saying that that's the exception to the rule? Because it's the same thing, really.
No, it is the exception to the rule.
Okay.
I mean, I listen, it doesn't mean you can't win without a guy who doesn't really give you anything.
Yeah.
I mean, Al Gore didn't bring anything to Bill Clinton's ticket. You know, a Southern senator with a Southern governor.
They carried Tennessee both times, didn't they?
Not the, they did.
He didn't on his own.
But, no, but, I mean, Clinton was a successful Southern governor.
Right.
I think he would have been in play in Tennessee.
Oh, they were making the generational ploy, so I would argue that.
So I don't know.
If people do it, I think they do it because of Clinton Gore. Because I think people look at it and say it worked for Bill Clinton.
Yeah, I think those are the exceptions. I think.
Okay.
Sometimes you can make a pick that ends up getting you something.
Okay.
But I think you are pretty much the only guarantee you have in picking your VP.
Okay.
Is picking up a state.
Okay.
So if you can get a guy that gets you a state and gets you something else, and that's the argument for Rubio. Oh, hey, he's going to give him Florida, put the Florida in the win column, and then bring Hispanics into the fold, and therefore. That's the whole argument for Rubio on the
okay.
ticket.
Well, all right.
I'm not convinced about the Hispanic element of it. I'm saying, yeah, it gets you Florida. The Hispanic thing is, that's a maybe.
That's a transparent pandering kind
of
a thing.
It all is, don't
yeah.
you think? I mean, regardless of,
yeah, but
it's all transparent.
Here's the thing, though.
Biden was pandering by saying, listen, the young, inexperienced guy who, 4 years ago was a state senator from Illinois is
right.
going to bring this old, experienced D.C. hand onto the ticket so we can all feel good. And plus he's got all this quote-unquote foreign policy experience.
Right.
And that was Obama's weakness, and therefore that balanced out the ticket. I mean, what did that really equate to?
That's my biggest one of my biggest problems with the Republican Party and their sense of strategery. Democrats are world-class effective panderers. Republicans suck. Republicans are horrible panderers. It's Mitt Romney getting on TV trying to talk in Spanish or whatever, like he's down with the peeps. Republicans are horrible, Chris. The next Republican who effectively panders in a major election will be the first.
Well, I agree. I don't think Republicans are good panderers because it's not in the nature, and then they try to do it, and they don't do it well. Again, another reason why I think it will be and it should be Rob Portman on the ticket. He's going to secure Ohio. Ohio's, there are a lot of issues right now in Ohio that don't put us squarely yet in back into the Republican fold. And if you're a Republican candidate for president, you must win Ohio. No Republican has ever won the White House without Ohio.
Yeah.
You've got to carry Ohio. And Portman gets you Ohio. And when you start to look at the map, Romney can expand the map. Romney gets Michigan. Now you've taken away Michigan and Ohio from Obama.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've got something in play.
Romney's the guy that said let them die to the auto companies. I don't think Romney carries Michigan. I honestly don't.
Well, I'm not saying, is it a guarantee? No, but
it'll be close.
His family history, he will be in play in Michigan.
Yep.
He'll probably I can't remember, refresh my memory. Republicans didn't win Nevada last time around.
I don't believe so.
He'll probably put Nevada back in the Republican column. They'll pick up some states, and that's what you have to do. I mean, that's what you need to do in order to beat the president. It's a popular electoral college. That's it. Look at the map.
Well, it's a thing here, and again, I know this is another point of view where I differ from you two guys, but we were talking about this, Ken, and my perspective is at this point that if somebody like Romney goes up there as the nominee, and I know myself, fellow original dignitary Nate Noy, I know there's got to be a lot of other people out there like that. We're voting third party this year, not selling out, not voting for Mitt Romney, because to me, the optimistic scenario at this point is that Obama wins and has to deal with the next 4 years. I don't see Romney as being up to it. I see a Democratic wave in 4 years. I mean, that
really?
Would be a heck of a thing for Grover Cleveland Obama to come back in 4 years and say, the first time I had a clean-up after W, this time I got a clean-up after Romney. Are you going to give me a real mandate this time? That's what keeps me up at night, Ken.
Chris made a lot of good points on this. Now I'm playing the politician here between the two of you. But back in the day, Kennedy took Johnson, for Texas. I think we had something very unique when Obama won. We had people who didn't even know who his vice president was.
Right.
That just voted for him because of his race. And he's an extreme candidate. I think people want somebody like the middle of the road. Which what Chris was going with was Portman and Romney are the middle of the road people. And I think Obama brought Biden on because he was more middle of the road. He was more establishment. He was, the Democrats knew. A lot of them, I don't think, would have voted for him if he would have taken somebody to the left like him.
Well, there was nobody else that was in play like that, right? There was Hillary, who's basically to the right of him. And who else was right? Evan Bayh. Evan Bayh, who's practically a Republican half the days of the week, or a moderate Republican.
Just to revisit your comment about how all these people that are going to sit on the sidelines or vote third party.
Yeah.
Rasmussen just did a poll and found that only 6% of Republicans are willing to consider stepping outside the nominee and voting for a third party in this process. So my suspicion to you is it's not going to be as great as you think.
Okay.
When it's all said and done. I think there are a lot of Republicans, if they don't like Romney, will swallow hard when looking at the alternative and vote for him.
But we talked about the 25%, though. How do you square him being Mr. 25% in all homes or in all states where he doesn't own, an elaborate mansion versus what you just said here? Because I don't see how that squares up. If 75% of people are basically barfing up the syrup of Ipecac in every state here and saying we're not going for Romney.
Well, I love your colorful language, but I don't think that they're actually vomiting.
Okay.
The other 75%, I don't believe, are actually vomiting.
Okay.
They just have other preferences, or they'd like to see somebody else. That doesn't mean they won't rally around their nominee. Republicans, McCain had the same problem. I mean, there were huge chunks of the Republican Party were steadfast against McCain, myself included. And
I was never as anti-McCain as you were. You were foaming at the mouth.
I voted for him.
Yeah.
And I voted for him because the alternative was not something that I could accept. And so this is what always happens through these processes in parties. And Republicans tend to more than not be good about, getting into line behind the nominee by and large. So I don't think you're going to see a big bunch of Republicans, jumping ship and forming a third party or whatnot. That isn't to say that there, as we've discussed previously, Rick, that there's not room for one or two decent or strong independent candidacies in this election this year. I certainly think there are. Now, whether they materialize, I don't know, but there's no doubt in my mind that there's room for one, if not two, strong independent candidates, which could really change the dynamic in this thing.
Let me ask you both this, because Rick, I'm like you to some extent. It's not Obama, and Romney's not doing anything for me, but I know what Obama has done.
Mm-hmm.
If there was a third party candidate out there, who do you see? It's not a Ross Perot that can stir the pot like he did for a period of time.
Michael Bloomberg's been very ostentatiously, flirting with it. There's a number of people out there. The Ron Paul thing won't happen because he's setting up Rand for a greater role down the road, which I actually am much in favor of, because the things I have a problem with Ron Paul on, Rand Paul is generally better, and I'm optimistic about that down the road. I would say Bloomberg, but here's the thing, though. Here's what's saving the two major parties, Chris. Everybody's always like, what if there was the third-party movement, whatever, independent thing? You know, what is the one reason that cannot happen, that there cannot be a consensus on that? What's the one dividing line? Social issues. You cannot paper over abortion, gay marriage, and these things. That is what is saving the demo Republicans that are driving us into the ditch right now, because you will never get anybody to coalesce. You're not going to get the Gary Bowers and what would be the equivalent of that, Norman Lear's of the world, to hold hands and say, we're just going to put this other stuff aside.
Well, I mean, I think an example is why the Tea Party won't be a party. I mean, the Tea Party supposedly doesn't care about social issues. It's all about economics.
That's overblown, though.
Well, I mean, the origins of the Tea Party were such. I mean, I've been to Tea Party rallies, and, you know, when I go down to Trumbull County and they've got, you know, Jim Trafficant down there and they're all yelling and screaming how much they love a convicted felon, not only is it an embarrassment, obviously, to the Tea Party, that's their idea of a great politician and a public servant. But, you know, there are Democrats that are traditionally in there. There are pro-choicers in there. And they're all concerned about constitutional issues and fiscal issues, monetary issues. And so, in some ways, the Tea Party has sort of been usurped a little bit by, you know, the social issue, you know, folks in those camps. But, you know, by and large, that movement has all been about constitutionality and fiscal issues and not social issues. So, that, I mean, that's an example of where you're right about that.
Mm-hmm.
I throw one other thing out there about 2012 to you, and that is the long-term impact. And I think it's very, very possible that if Romney is the nominee, and I look at the map, I can see several scenarios where Romney wins the electoral map and just like in 2000, loses the popular vote.
Yeah.
So we could have another president elected having lost the popular vote but winning the electoral college. And what happens then when we've now had it happen twice? Now, of course, if it ever happened in the opposite, a Democrat, no one would ever complain. But once a Republican is not winning the popular vote but winning the electoral college and happens again twice in 12 years, how much screaming and yelling is there going to be about changing the Constitution to take away the Electoral College? You know, polls have shown that the vast majority of the public, you know, it's like 72% are in favor of getting rid of the Electoral College. Now, in my opinion, that shows some of the ignorance of the general population as it relates to the importance of the Electoral College and why it exists.
Yeah.
But and what it protects us against.
Yes.
But you know, there will be increased pressure, and I can see several scenarios when I look at the map and I do some quick studying. I could really see that happening.
That's very interesting. My guess. I made a prediction for the blog on New Year's Day. I did some predictions looking ahead for the year. I predicted Obama would get 290 against Romney, so I'm not far off from where you're at. I think he would win narrowly in the Electoral College. Here's the thing, though. Now I'm going to be the guy to say this. What happens if the Electoral College costs a black guy the presidency, much less an incumbent? I mean, you think the Rev Al is going to have anything to say on his show about the Electoral College was a poison pill put in the Constitution by the pro-slavery founding fathers?
Well,
it'll be the vestiges of
slave-owning founding fathers.
It'll be like the poll tax. Jerks.
Right. Well, we'll hear lots about three-fifths and other various other things. And,
right.
You know, we changed that, so therefore we should, you know, you know.
Certain things make it so inflammatory that you just can't get away from it.
And I think that that's something that we should be on guard for, because I think the Electoral College is a bit of the genius of the founding fathers.
It is, yes.
To protect the smaller states from the tyranny of the New Yorks and the Californias,
right,
and the Floridas and the big states and Texas, you know, the big states. It's to protect the smaller states. The same way everybody gets two in the Senate. So these are the safeguards, and we start to erode them. We are eroding our very democracy. And so,
I don't think there's going to be as many people coming out voting for Obama this year as opposed to when he won, because that was an agenda.
Totally agree.
Right.
So I see his numbers going down.
Lower vote
as far
total
as the popular vote goes.
And a lower overall number. Yeah, I agree.
So
I agree. Yeah, he won't get that explode. We already see it in the numbers.
One time.
The young folks under 25 have just checked out.
I mean,
they look at Obama and go, yeah, all right, well, that didn't, you know. He's not the guy we thought he was, and they're not as excited as they were.
No.
As it turns out, you know, African American turnout in 2008 wasn't as high as we all anticipated it was going to be.
Right.
They didn't even show up.
Yeah.
You know, they overwhelmingly voted for him.
Right.
But there was not actually a huge surge in votes to get out and vote for the guy.
Maybe John McCain was doing some inner-city pamphleteering about Obama's white mother. Maybe that held it down.
I don't think that's the case.
You don't think so?
But I don't know. I'm sure there's a six-month period that we, you know, someone has to figure out where Ed Rollins was. But other than that, you know, it... It's, you know, listen, I think you're right. You're dead on about that. There will be a lower turnout for Obama, which is really why when I look at the map, I think that, you know, he's going to have, you look at how he won last time in his map. Is he going to carry Virginia again? I don't believe so.
No.
Is he going to carry North Carolina again? He could.
I don't see it.
But I don't think he will. North Carolina is really a state that's become in play.
Right.
They've had a 35% increase in the Hispanic population.
Yep.
It's a growing state.
In the last decade. There's obviously a very large African-American population, and there's a huge mix of East Coast, Ivy League educational types in the Research Triangle area with
right.
Duke, North Carolina, and the companies that are down there.
Don't forget the NASCAR.
And so... Mm-hmm. Oh, those are our guys. I think that North Carolina is a state that we're going to have to get used to is going to be in play going forward.
No, it could.
But I don't see Obama.
Indiana.
I don't see him winning Indiana. I don't see him losing Virginia. And this is where the map starts to move away from him. If Romney can win Michigan and take that out of his column, so now you're looking at, and I think Romney will carry New Hampshire. Which Obama, so now he's lost New Hampshire, Michigan, Indiana, Virginia.
Right.
Where's he making, what are his new states that he's adding to back in the mix? He puts Portman on the ticket, Romney does. Now Obama loses Ohio. And so now you go, where's he making it up? And this is why there are a lot of people, obviously, that believe that, you know, no matter what the Republicans do, they're going to win. Because when you start to break this down state by state, you start to see where, you know, the president's going to have to find. You know, he's going
right.
to have to win Florida. He's going to have to, you know, win a few other states. You know, he's going to have to play in Arizona. He's going to have to hold Colorado.
Right.
He's got to expand his map somehow because I can see him losing those five states right off the top.
I have a question on the third party thing.
Yeah.
With the people who are now in the debates for the Republicans,
mm-hmm.
what if a Perry splinters off and starts the third party or goes with the Tea Party or does something like that? My question is, I guess, to both of you is, do the other remaining four people running for the nomination, for
yeah.
the Republican nomination, are they going to just say, okay, here you go, Mitt, I'm throwing everything behind you?
Well,
or do they kind of...
That's what Republicans
you know, I know
do.
There's always the deal-making and stuff, but
yeah.
with the country as a whole having
right.
such disregard for anybody in political office.
Sure.
An all-time low.
Right.
Do they go out on their own?
No, I don't think so. I mean, look, Perry's still my guy, but, I mean, he's got like a less than 1% chance at this point, I'd say. But unless it happens in the system, he ain't going outside the system to do it. Nobody else really has the juice to do it at this point. And again, and it's unfair in that sense because, again, Perry is taking a very demagogic blowback in this last week on this whole Bain Capital thing here. It's like, you're attacking capitalism. Oh, my gosh. To ever say anything about a man's record. Chris brought up a great point the last time we were doing this here when we were recording just last month about the average person resenting, and I think for good reason, some of the casino capitalism things, the excesses in the system in the last 20 to 25 years. And we can sit here and we can say, okay, Bain is inside of that or outside of that or whatever. But if Republicans are going to align themselves blindly to status quo stuff here, when everybody can say, look, people may not like the smelly hippies of Occupy Wall Street, but there are some things when you talk about the excesses of the system that ring true to everybody
exactly.
who's got an open mind. And Republicans are throwing out the baby with the bathwater, Chris, if they're just going to blindly be like, I love the status quo and all manifestations of capitalism and its excesses at all costs, not an electoral winner.
Well, I don't disagree with that. I think there has to be recognition of some of the problems that we have from a society standpoint. But getting back to your original question about, you know, guys like Perry, you can only do a third-party run if you've got money and infrastructure. And the only guy in the mix on the Republican side who has that is Ron Paul. And so he's you know, he is the only one of all those that could really mount any kind of an independent run. And he's not going to, for the reasons that Rick has already illustrated about his son. And that's what'll keep Ron Paul from doing that. But you know, so there won't be a third party challenge out of any of these guys in the field.
Okay.
But again,
or the ones who didn't run, like Thune or Christie or anybody
else. If they didn't run, they're not going to now.
Yeah.
They're too far behind in terms of infrastructure and money. And those things are, as we're seeing, again, the Romney candidacy is a great example, again, of why those things, more times than not, matter. You know, it really, in large part, in politics, comes down to nuts and bolts, and that is infrastructure, staffing, your organization, and money. And, you know, you see it, you saw it with Huckabee, you're seeing it with Santorum.
Yeah.
The flash in the pan, a big win. But you don't have the infrastructure in place. You don't have the fundraising mechanisms in place, and they can't sustain it. And that's why, you know, Romney will be the nominee, because he has those things in place. That's why there won't be a third-party challenge out of any of these guys. Bloomberg has the money, and because he has the money on the front end, he can certainly create an infrastructure because of the money. And you know, but again, I don't know how successful he is, because I don't know where a sort of left of center moderate is. You know, it doesn't get out and excite people to want to jump on their bandwagon.
Right.
So you can see a guy like Bloomberg getting out there and pulling his 11% or whatever he's going to end up pulling, or 10%, and potentially taking New York out of the Obama column.
It would have an effect.
And
it always does.
Yeah. Oh, it'll have an. It would definitely have an effect. It probably takes New York out of Obama's column and probably almost guarantees Mitt Romney's election. And so, but I don't know. Is there somebody else out there that could put it together and create, you know, there's some interesting people out there that don't have the cash and the infrastructure, but are intriguing people. I mean, there's guys like Petraeus, although I think, you know, he's a Republican and
mm-hmm.
and I don't see him doing that, although I wouldn't, again, discount a Petraeus run down the road. He's a, you know, I'm curious how the Republican Party will, they'll love his, you know, his military background. I think the Republican Party, what they won't like about Petraeus is that he's an intellectual.
Yeah.
And I mean, and I don't, we don't really know where his politics.
We don't cotton to book learning.
We don't know where Petraeus's like politics are yet.
Right.
I mean, we just don't know.
No.
He's had a successful military career. He's been, you know, quite brilliant at times. He's a very, very smart guy. I mean, you know, he reads the classics for enjoyment. You know,
mm-hmm.
Hey, I just sat down with some, you know, some Greek, ancient Greek literature this weekend. And I mean, he's an intellectual. He's a smart, smart guy. You know, I don't know how he plays with a large portion of the Republican base, and I don't know that a guy like that, you know, necessarily has it in him to run. But I'm just saying there are some interesting people
out
there, and
so that's what I was asking, I guess.
It remains to be seen, you know, whether they get in. I'll tell you this: they got to get in sooner than later.
Right.
I was gonna say, yeah. That was my next question: is when does this happen? If it happens.
Well, it comes down to ballot access.
Yeah.
You've got to get on the ballot.
Right.
All these states have different deadlines and whatnot to get themselves on the ballot.
Yeah, Virginia.
Ohio's Ohio's independent deadline is the day before the primary.
Mm-hmm.
So now, unless they've changed it for the presidential, I mean, that means it's like March 5th.
Right.
Clock's ticking.
Yes,
so,
it is.
As the clock ticks, you know, somebody's not going to be a serious independent candidate and get in June. I mean, it's just there'll be a whole bunch of states they won't even be on the ballot in.
Right. It's not going to happen.
The clock's ticking louder and louder is what you're saying.
Oh, absolutely. And so, you know, is there the potential? There's definitely the potential in this volatile period of American politics, but, you know, it remains to be seen if it'll happen.
No, I want to circle back around to what you said about Petraeus for a second here. I agree with you, it won't be this time. But what will make him a viable candidate down the road? I mean, we spent a fair amount of time, not just in this session, but also when we were talking last month about politics, the doom and gloom, the last couple of decades, really, you know, the problems of all of this period of time now that we're having to deal with right now. For somebody like David Petraeus, what a narrative. How many people have unmitigated success stories to go out there and peddle. This counterinsurgency doctrine and the way that he's been able to execute militarily with these strategies, applying that big brain of his to tangible results on the battlefield, I mean, if that's not going to move people when he's getting up there giving speeches and talking about tangible success, then nothing will.
Well, he's a smart guy. Americans always tend to like their generals when they're successful, and he's been very successful.
Right.
And, you know, we are in a period right now where the public hates Congress. They dislike the president. They dislike, you know, so many of their state legislatures and various other politicians up and down the board. They're looking for a non-politician. Again, another thing that he can hang his hat on. He's not been here part of the problem. He's a guy who gets things done. And as we mentioned the last time, you know, that's been my big point. And then I tell, you know, candidates that I work with, which is the public is looking for somebody that gets things done. That's their big thing right now. By and large, the amorphous middle, you know, 80% of the public is all about, you know, they don't understand some of these grandiose plans and the debt ceiling this or that, the economic this, or they just want to see success in somebody who's getting stuff done. And that's and you can't underestimate that. Candidates who run on that in this cycle will do better than those who don't.
Yep.
And Petraeus, that would be his strong suit in 4 years or whenever if he wanted to run, is I'm outside the mess. I'm not a politician. I'm a smart guy. Look what I did for our country in terms of public service, A. B, I get things done.
Yeah.
I'm a solutions-oriented guy who figures out how to cut through it and have success. And, you know, we have another 4 to 8 years of malaise and inaction out of Congress and volatility, and the House is going back and forth between, you know, Pelosi and Boehner, and the public's fed up. That's when they're going to look for somebody who's outside that traditional box, who can point to things and tangibles like you just mentioned.
It's interesting you mentioned the generals. I had never thought about Petraeus, but you think about Ulysses S. Grant, you think about our George Washington.
Eisenhower.
Eisenhower is another one, and I never thought about that.
The public loved MacArthur. They loved Patton. Guys didn't run, but they, you know, they loved them.
I never thought about that aspect of it. That's very good stuff.
Public loved Westmoreland. Wait, not so much. But anyways, well, as far as it goes with Petraeus, I mean, I can't think of anybody in American life off the top of my head where if you're talking about can do, get stuff done, results, and in a bad situation, no less. Nobody can beat Petraeus.
Well,
on that
metric would be his appeal.
Yeah.
If the country's in worse shape,
what we're looking for.
I mean, he's going to come in and say, "Listen, I'm going to do a political surge.
Right.
We're going to come up with a strategy, regardless of party.
Right.
And even if he is a Republican, he'll say, regardless of party.
Right.
Yeah. Or if he's running as a Democrat, he's going to say, regardless of party, we're going to come up with solutions and we're going to get this thing done and we're going to take control." And that's what people would, at that point, if we have another 4, 6, 8 years of just disastrous malaise and combative politics, the public will be yearning for someone to come in
and bring people together,
in, fill that void, and with the promises of stability and fixing, and he would have a track record of being able to show where, look what I've done, hand me the keys, you know. You can't do worse. I mean, you know, if we're at that point and that door is open to him, that means that, you know, that 4, 8 years has not gone well for this country.
Right.
Well,
and
we're
people will be looking for that option.
And I totally agree as I'm waving my flag over here. Mm-hmm. We need somebody at this time more than ever, probably, in my lifetime, to bring people together. And that goes along. That's exactly what you're saying, Chris.
People are always looking for this can-do kind of leadership.
The apathy and the anger out here.
I mean, you know, think about it. Look, if it hadn't been for the voices in his head, we might have had 8 years of President Perot. People are looking for this kind of stuff here.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you have something like that kind of, you know, insanity that just disqualifies you, if you are a can-do kind of individual, people will gravitate to that. So bringing it kind of full circle to where we're at with Mitt Romney, who, you know, all the powers that be in the Republican Party are telling us is this can-do kind of a guy. I want to go back to something from in the fall here. I don't remember the specifics. These events are moving so fast, front runners coming and going. I don't remember who it was, but Mitt Romney really demagogued the hell out of somebody on Social Security. Was that Newt or was that Perry at that time? I think it was Perry.
It was Perry.
Yeah, he was scaremongering him. There is a special place in hell reserved for all the poobahs of the Republican Party who are herding everyone behind Romney right now and saying, don't talk about Bain Capital, you're sounding like a Democrat. Mitt Romney, demagogue the hell. What is less un-Republican, according to party orthodoxy, than scaring old people on Social Security? He did it, and it was fine. And the damn hypocrites that control this party kept their mouths shut at the time. Well, it's just politics. He's just doing what he's got to do. It's politics. Apparently, it's not so benign when it's going after the anointed one, Chris. That gives me an aneurysm.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, in some respects, it is just politics, and it's up to Perry to swing that back around on Romney in this process.
He needs to draw that connection.
And he's failed to do that.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. I think it's both sides of it are distasteful. Sort of attacking Perry for speaking the truth about a program that's got real problems. And I think it's just as problematic for us to be attacking Romney on his work with Bain Capital, in terms of their place within the capitalist system. And there is a place for companies like Bain Capital that do turnarounds and buy acquisitions. And the thing that always keeps coming to my mind throughout this process is that, if you remember the movie Gross Point Blank, there's a line in there where John Cusack is trying to explain to his love interest in the movie that why he's a hitman, and his moral justification is, listen, it's not me. If I'm at your door, you did something to bring me there, and that's how I kind of view Bain Capital, is that they didn't go and buy Apple, they didn't go and buy Microsoft and run it into the ground. They go and they buy companies that are on life support and ready to die. And they try to turn them around. And yes, as part of that reward of trying to put things together, make a profit. Sometimes they made a profit and they were successful and the companies are doing well. You use the Staples example and some others, the Domino's Pizza. And then there are examples where they failed and they lost money and the company shut down. There are even some examples of where they made a bunch of money and the company eventually failed anyway. So it's a mixed bag, but I mean, all those companies were in trouble and on life support and were going to die unless a company like a Bain Capital had stepped in anyway. And so I kind of think of it about that line. Those companies did something to bring Mitt Romney and Bain Capital to their door.
Whoa.
And so I think demagoguing them on being a part of the capitalist process is just as wrong as Mitt Romney, demagoguing Rick Perry when he said that, Social Security is a Ponzi scheme and it's broken, and Rick Perry was right, in terms of when you look at it from just a straight, now is it a Ponzi scheme in the same criminal activity sense? No, but when you look at Social Security from a standpoint of, you're paying current investors in with future investors that you're bringing in.
Come on,
all the time.
Chris. How many old people are you and I subsidizing right now? 2, 3, 4? Come on.
Well, a whole bunch.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, when Social Security started, there were, I believe the number, I can't remember, it was either 17 workers for every one retiree.
Yeah.
And now it's like 3 to 1.
Yeah.
And so that equation has come down. The only people on Social Security right now are getting your money, my money.
Yeah.
And, that is, in its truest definition, a Ponzi scheme, taking the money of new investors to pay your current investors.
Right.
True. I mean, that's what it is. Obviously, Perry wasn't speaking, is trying to claim that Social Security was a criminal, activity fraught with fraud and, everything else.
Right.
But from a math standpoint, he was correct, and Romney was wrong to attack him on it. But again, political advantage. They all do it. Newt's doing it now to Romney on Bain Capital, while at the same time Newt doesn't want anybody to look behind the curtain and talk about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and some other.
He was a historian, don't you know?
Right. Well, I was. I was a history major in college. I should start telling that when I do consulting for businesses and candidates from now on. I should just on the billing. I should just put People ask me what I do, I should just say a historian.
Educated them on the classics.
That's right.
Well, I'll tell you what, too. Something we're going to hear about, and the Republicans haven't gone there, but Obama will. The part of Bain Capital, and it's a healthy part of it, that dealt with in the restructuring of these companies, outsourcing. Hello, may I take your order? You're going to be hearing a lot about that in the fall, Chris.
Well, you will be. And listen, both sides are going to throw what they've got on the other side against their opponents. You know, Obama's going to have a treasure trove of stuff to throw at Romney, and Romney's going to have a treasure trove of stuff to throw at Obama. And, you know, both sides are going to duke it out, and it's going to be up to the public to make a decision of, you know, where they come down on this, and, you know, if you will, on the warts of both candidates and their positions, and where does the public, you know, flush out on it. I mean, Obama has tons of baggage. I mean, Let's look at some of the stuff he's done. So it's out there. And, you know, Romney's got his warts. And so, I mean, there's no perfect candidate. Everybody gets in with problems. And so that's the process.
And this is a year where, again, it may sound ahistorical for me to say this. I'm going to say worst choice in American presidential history. Two power-hungry chodes who have nothing good to recommend themselves, but only don't vote for me because the other guy sucks. I mean, I don't. I think it's the most depressing one. I'm open to somebody pointing out a worse choice to me, but I haven't seen a worse one than this one. And we're at the outset, as you said, of a long, exhaustive year of bitter negativity, major money bags coming in on both sides, and even quote unquote independently to weigh in on this. My bottom line on all of this, Chris, is that I think the political equivalent of the cure for cancer is going to be when we figure out a way to do something about the money that is just poisoning this thing at every level, the influence peddling that's legal, that buys for these ads. Everybody knows they're getting something for these commercials that are running here. I didn't like McCain-Feingold. I wasn't as violently opposed to it as you were because I understood.
Well, I believe in the First Amendment. I believe in the First Amendment, unlike apparently you do.
Well, Chris, I mean, it's just... Is it an absolutism on this?
Money has always been in politics.
Money equals speech?
Money has always been in politics.
Are corporations people also? I mean,
well, actually, I agree with Mitt Romney on that. Corporations are people.
Oh, I certainly don't.
Corporations are a sum total of people. They're the people that run the company, the people that work at the company and get their jobs from it, and the shareholders that buy into it, and those people. And those include, you know, retired teachers in California with their pension funds and whatnot. So, yes, you know, is a corporation a person? No, it's not a living organism, but it's with a soul. It is an entity that is made up of 100% people, and the people that get their jobs and they make money and they have shareholders have profit and they put money and invest in it, and the people that run it and so on down the line. So corporations are people. I mean, they are a, you know, the same way, that's like saying a union isn't people. A trade union is people as well.
It's an organism that is comprised of both the people that are in it, the assets and the liabilities. It's a multidimensional thing of which the people are but one element, as I see it.
Right, but the important thing about the Citizens United case is the fact that it finally leveled the playing field between corporations and labor unions as it relates to contributing to political campaigns. Labor unions have had a lot of free reign for a long time versus corporations to do what they want, to take money from their members, spend it how their leadership decides, and to throw cash all over the place, where corporations have been shackled.
So now corporations can urinate at us through our TV screens. Yay, red state. I mean, I don't know. There's got to be more to life than that.
I mean, we've been being urinated on for years by the public sector unions.
But it's like, it just goes back to this red
election.
State, blue state. Like, it's okay if my side does it. It's not. Is there no intellectual honesty left? That there's got to be a way to try to get at
things intellectual honesty better. Standpoint is allowing everyone to spend what they want to spend. I think the failure in the system is the fact that we've taken the money so far outside of the campaigns themselves, and we have to create all these silly little things like super PACs and this kind of PAC and this kind of organization and 527 this to try to funnel all these dollars through, rather than just saying, you as a citizen, as an individual, you as a corporation, you as a trade labor organization, can spend whatever you deem you want to spend, either as an organization or an individual, you know, giving it either independent or, you know, doing the ads yourselves or giving as much money as you want to the candidates and just being done with it and having complete transparency. we would be a lot better off with just 100% transparency, and they could all just give the money directly to the campaigns, than we are with all these crazy third-party groups running around now. You look at the Republican primaries at this point, the super PACs have outspent the campaigns 2-1.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're going to get in the general election now, is presidents now chosen by super PACs rather than just allowing the dollars to just go to, you know, go to Obama or Romney or whomever. Why should I, as an individual, why is Chris Galloway limited to $1,000 in giving to my presidential candidate of my choice? That's why I hate McCain-Feingold and those types of laws. Why have they decided that Rick Morris can only give $1,000 to Ron Paul or Rick Perry? Why,
I think the economy and the wife and wife has put those limits on me rather than the government.
Well, listen, you may decide want to sell all your possessions and give that $75 to Ron Paul. I don't know. But listen, why should you be limited in doing it? And that's been my problem with all those types of laws and rules, is that it's undemocratic. I view it as unconstitutional. They're placing a limit on my speech. I can only give $1,000 to Congressman X. If I want to give a $5,000 check to Congressman X and it's disclosed that I gave that money, why can't I do that? And the fact is, now I can do that because of these decisions and these laws and these loopholes and McCain-Feingold and all this ridiculousness, because I can now give all that money to a super PAC. But now the candidate doesn't control it, wink, wink. It's now going through this third party. I can give $1 million now to a super PAC, you know, but I can't give it to John Huntsman's campaign directly.
I don't know if you saw the thing on TV the other day where somebody showed the clip. I think it was John Stewart showed the clip of Mitt Romney like, I don't even know what these PACs are saying on my behalf. And it cut to another thing. What the thing actually said was
it's all so thinly veiled that we all know it. We all understand it. And listen, they don't have to technically break the law in order to, you know, if you will, coordinate. They're not allowed to coordinate.
Right.
So they don't. And I can tell you, they don't. But it's really easy to do.
Right.
Because if you're the Newt PAC, and or whatever you call yourself, and you want to put a bunch of advertising, you do a press release and says, we've just bought $1.4 million in advertising in these five markets in South Carolina.
Right.
Okay? Now you're the Newt campaign. Well, I guess we don't have to spend money on those markets. We'll put all our money in the Charleston market then.
Right.
I mean, they didn't talk.
Right.
They just, you know, they just worked the process. To me, that is, it's been created and developed in such a ridiculous fashion that we go through this process.
Right.
The money should just go to Newt's campaign and they spend it to get their man elected. And that Rick Morris gets to give Newt however much money he wants to, and it's disclosed. It doesn't go through a third party that has to pretend that they don't ever know the candidate. I mean, that's the lunacy of McCain-Feingold and what cases like Citizens United have created. And I don't blame the Supreme Court like some people do. They had to make a decision, mm-hmm. and I think they made the right decision. It's laws like McCain-Feingold that have created this arbitrary, ridiculous set of rules to try to limit the influence of money on politics, where money has always had an influence on American politics since day one. And beyond that, why is there money in politics? Because it costs money. If Americans stopped watching television and stopped forming their entire opinion on politics and public policy based on 30-second ads or watching The Daily Show, campaigns wouldn't cost so much. Campaigns mm-hmm. cost a ton of money because media, television, and radio cost an incredible amount of money in order to get your message out there to a public that otherwise pays no one and no other attention in terms of educating themselves or preparing themselves to vote in an election. And so therefore, that's why there's money in this. And the media sits and screams about it and all this dirty process and blah, 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 while they gladly suck all that cash into their coffers to pay for that advertising. Mm-hmm. You have television stations and networks that basically a huge portion of their profit comes about because of political advertising.
Right.
You know, it's almost like they're Black Friday. Mm-hmm. But then they wring their hands on their little talk shows and go, oh, how terrible an influence and it's how awful, while they're making billions and hundreds of millions of dollars on political advertising.
Well, you mentioned the Daily Show there. I'm going to say I think one of the best things that's happening on the whole subject of money and politics, what Colbert is doing right now, just completely ridiculing the whole super PAC thing. This is something where, and it's a sad state on our uneducated citizenry, but more people are learning about the complete and utter fraud that is our financial system as far as money in politics. More people are learning about that from what Colbert is doing and making fun of it than all the other things or all the other initiatives right now put together.
I don't like what Colbert's doing.
You don't?
I don't, and I'll tell you why.
He's satirizing something that's un-American as far as I'm concerned.
I agree, and I love that part of it.
Yeah.
I like satirizing American politics. I love what Jon Stewart does, where he points out the stupid comments from politicians on both sides of the aisle when they contradict themselves or when they say something stupid. And I love when Colbert does the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
What I don't like is how Colbert is sort of clowning around with our democratic institutions and sort of cheapening them for entertainment value and saying and that's what he's doing by running for president and by creating a super PAC. Yes, he is charterizing them, and yes, you know, but I don't like the cheapening of the process. It's, again, the blurring of the line between politics and entertainment that which I just absolutely abhor. It cheapens the process. It convinces Americans that all public officials are clowns and why they're all, you know, quote, why, and it helps to lead that thought process within the public's mind about why they're all terrible. Every public official, every politician is terrible. And I know for a fact that's absolutely not the case. The vast majority of public officials and politicians are very well-meaning, dedicated public servants who are doing their damnedest to do the right things for their communities and whatnot. And it saddens me to sort of see this cheapening of the process. And I think there should be a lot more reverence towards the office of the presidency, not less of it. And, you know, I have no problem with a president being, you know, made fun of on SNL. I mean, I enjoy that. I think it's an important part of being in a democracy to be able to do that. And I think Jon Stewart's done a great job of that. That educational aspect of sort of poking fun at the process and the people, but I think Colbert's taking it too far for his own fame, his own money making, and I don't like cheapening the process. I think it's too important, and I think it weakens our institutions in the long run.
Well, as we bring this all the way around, then as we culminate this segment. Ken, you're going to have to break a tie for us here because I disagree with Chris. He says cheapening. I say holding up a mirror. I say it's already cheapened. I say it's already a sewer. I say a country that gives me Obama versus Romney has already flipped me the middle finger, and I'm flipping the finger back.
And I would say to you, you don't get out of the sewer by jumping further into it.
We're both lobbying him.
You both make valid points.
Okay.
I guess I look at politicians, and we've lost this, and then we jumped a shark many, many years ago. You're public servants, and I think the politicians, a lot of politicians have cheapened the political offices themselves.
2 points for me.
But I also see Chris's point, that I didn't vote for Obama, but he is my president, and I think there is, and always should be, a reverence for that.
The John Huntsman line. I serve my country.
And yes, exactly.
My two sons in the Navy don't ask who their commander-in-chief is.
Huntsman won me over just with that statement alone.
I'm not going to stick up for all the morons that are pushing the Barack Hussein Obama crap. I'm not going to get lumped in with that.
But there is a thing that when people like myself and other people in the country see these politicians going in with no term limits, hanging on forever and a day, when you go in and you're making a certain amount of money and you come out...
Revolving door, lobbyist job when you get done.
A whole lot more money than you ever
went in for.
Yeah. To me, that's not a definition of a public servant.
Right.
And I think we've created this monster. So how do you, now we talked earlier off the air, it's Pandora's box. We've opened this up. Do we go to term limits? Do we?
I think Ohio, what's happened in Ohio is a great example of why term limits are a disaster. a lot of the missteps that Ohio has made in the last number, you know, last 10 years, in large part has been because of term limits. I don't always agree with them, but Tom Suttis has an article in the Plain Dealer today that you should read about some of the stuff that's gone on, and he's using recent examples and the effect that term limits have on that. Columbus is now mostly controlled and run by lobbyists and staff because there's no institutional knowledge from the public officials. They're there for a short period of time, and they have to immediately be worrying about fundraising the next election and what they're going to do afterwards, rather than getting on with the job and not having that pressure and that sort of that gun at their back all the time. Yeah. Senator Graystrike, whom I used to work for, correctly always pointed out why term limits are bad. She said, because you're here for 8 years. She goes, she always used to say, it takes you about 7 years to actually get a full understanding of how to operate and how to get things done and how to do the job, and then you're gone. And so I've never been a fan of term limits. We have term limits. It's up to the public. It's every 2 years we have elections. It's their job to push these guys out.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying the system isn't sort of broken in that sense.
Yeah.
But adding more term limits doesn't help us, because if you put term limits on, say, in Congress, and this is something that I disagree with Huntsman on, you know, you'll have the same problem that you have in all these state legislatures that have term limits, where, again, you want to empower the lobbyists and the staff even more, put term limits in place.
Well, not only that, and yep. I characteristically will give a more cynical slant to what Chris just said here.
Yep.
Politicians are cockroaches. It's not a thing where, oh, I'm term limited out. I'll go back and I'll just serve my community in private business or whatever. Nope. If I'm in the state house, I'll go to the state senate. If I'm in the senate,
well,
go to the
that's
house.
That's true, too. You're
a
lifetime.
Here, I'll go there. Yeah. Ken,
like
you can't.
Like a college kid that stays in college forever.
Yeah, it's basically, I don't know if it's a dopamine addiction or whatever with these people, but there's something in the pleasure center or in the brains that is only triggered by the accrual of more power.
Well,
so it's not a thing of where after 8 years, I'll go home. Nobody abides by that, Ken, and that's the problem.
I'm not that cynical as you are
mm-hmm.
about that. That's
okay.
the reason why.
Okay.
I think it's human nature more than anything.
Okay.
I think that humans do what they know. And if you've been in public service, you know, let's say you're a county commissioner, and then you go to the state house, and you've now done that for, let's say, 16 years. In some ways, and I know we hate this because we like the citizens, you know, the sort of citizen public servant, but it sort of becomes your profession. It's what you know and understand, public policy, how to move things along, how to do these things. It's kind of like being a lawyer or being a teacher. It's what you know. And I think what happens in human nature is people don't move away from the things they know. People never like to come out of their comfort zone. And I think that we always make this mistake of thinking that somehow politicians are different than normal people. They are just like every other person. I mean, they reflect the public brilliantly. You know, a certain percentage of them are crooks, a certain percentage of them are dishonest. Mm-hmm. It's just like the population as a whole. By and large, most people are good, honest, hardworking people, and the same can be said for politicians and public officials. You've got some bad eggs, just like in the regular public. Not everyone that's in the general public is an adulterer or whatnot. You know, our politicians mirror us, and human nature being what it is, people don't like to change. They don't like change. They like to be in their comfort zone. Well, for politicians, and you've been doing, say you've been a public official, you started out for all the right reasons, and you still are doing some good things, but it's what you know. And so people don't walk away and change what they know. It just doesn't happen. The guy that runs a business doesn't walk out of the office one day and go, you know what, I'm going to go and become an auto mechanic. He doesn't just flip overnight and just go do something totally different than what he knows.
Yeah, but we don't elect auto mechanics.
Yeah,
true.
And we ought to. I mean,
we're not making laws for other auto mechanics.
True. We're making laws, you know, involving the very politicians here. They're the ones that are passing laws. It's interesting how much I can agree and simultaneously disagree
right.
with Chris. I agree
with a lot of points Chris makes.
We certainly do have the country that we deserve from the politicians.
Yeah.
We're also a country that's gotten dumb and obese and lowbrow and all these kind of things.
And that's on us.
Yeah, exactly. We're a country that elevates the importance of American Idol. Enough said.
And we
so
get impeached, too.
That's why we have the politicians we do. So, Chris, you're absolutely right about that. We do have the politicians we deserve. It's just not a credit on us.
Well, I think we have the politicians we vote for. And it's up to us as citizens to to vote them out or vote them in based on their merits. And the public, you know, and this has always been the case. This is not a new phenomenon in the last 20 years.
No.
Americans have to educate themselves on where these people are in terms of their positions and what they've been doing and hold them accountable. You know, there's periods of yellow journalism. The country's always been pretty well divided, you know, going back through our history. Hell, we fought a civil war over some issues of pretty big importance. And so we've always been divided, but we've also always been a nation that's been very cynical of our public officials. I mean, when George Washington became president, it was not this instant love fest with the whole country. I mean, there were people that called him King George. I mean, it, you know, on and on and on. I mean, you know, so we've always had that. So I'm not prepared to just write it all off in some ways cynically like you are. I think it's always been like that. I think in today's mediated political realities, it's like the same discussion is going on, but now it's going on through a megaphone, and not just a megaphone, but it's going on, you know, messages on blimps up in the air, mm-hmm. and you know, because back in the day, you had some guy with a printing press, and he, you know, and Sam Adams ran that printing press, and that was it. And now you've got television and radio and internet and Twitter and, you know, blogospheres and in this, you know, fantastic program, FDH Lounge.
Absolutely.
And that's why it seems almost to some people like it's worse, you know, quote unquote. But it's not. It's the same.
No.
Human nature is the same.
And what I want to add to that is, mm-hmm. and I'm as we're going into a positive direction here.
Okay.
Is 2010, the elections in the House and the Senate, mm-hmm. it was up to us if we wanted to affect change, and we did.
Yeah, we did. That's right. We made big changes.
So it's not like we're handcuffed here.
Yeah, the changemonger in the White House didn't like it, but it was a different kind of change.
And I'll say this one last thing, because I hear this all the time. People will say, oh, these politicians are all a bunch of crooks. I will tell you that right now, today, in 2012, if you look top to bottom of all elected officials in this country, this is probably the most honest set of public officials that we have had in our country's history, and that's because of transparencies within the media that's available. People can gain knowledge about what people are doing. You just dial it back into the 1890s, where offices were literally bought and sold.
Oh, yes.
Where politicians would literally, with nobody looking at them, except graft to get contracts done, flat
right.
out in the open like
right.
that. Now we have sunshine laws. Now we have auditing. Now, you know, of books. And yes, from time to time, these things are unearthed, and there's you know, the Jimmy DeMoras.
Trips to Vegas with the Hoers.
But Jimmy DeMoras are far and fewer than what they were 100 years ago.
Yeah.
The political landscape was littered with Jimmy DeMoras.
Right.
100 years ago. And
right.
now they're the rare exception. Okay? They really are.
You still got like a fairy godfather down in Akron, but,
well,
you know, you still do have some.
We had the dailies in Chicago.
My point is that we shouldn't be so cynical, because I think top to bottom in terms of elected officials, this is probably the most, if you will, uncorrupt set of public officials, from the lowest school board member in Topeka, Kansas, all the way up to the president, that we've had in our country's history, if
okay.
you take it as a whole.
All right.
And that's because of things of like the technology. The same things that make us think things are much worse are also actually making things better.
Okay.
And it's up to us, as citizens, to complete that equation
okay.
by voting and educating and using those same tools to educate ourselves to the best of our ability and make reasoned decisions when it's time to vote. That's the true term limit.
Okay. All right. Two things to bring this all the way around conclusively here on a little bit of a lighter note. One, you mentioned George Washington and some of the challenges he had to face. And certainly among them was the fact that I know for a fact those wooden choppers didn't pull out good in the focus groups. People were turned off by that.
Well, and that, not only that, but he also didn't have wooden teeth.
They
were whalebone, but okay.
Oh, well. I love this about
only
the lounge.
Here
you
at
always
the FDH
work.
Lounge,
yeah.
Can you get this kind of information?
World exclusive.
And I just want to point out, I'm sending you an invoice as your historian.
World exclusive, as I play Carnival Barker about all the knowledge you can get here.
Well, we could also, whoever finishes second, if it's Mitt or Obama,
yeah.
they could be the vice president.
Very good. I that would be an interesting way to do it. Also, the other point I wanted to make here, I said that, Ken, you were going to settle this between Chris and I, who was right, who was wrong on the cynicism thing here, and you managed to split the difference in
Thank
true
you.
Politician
a very good politician.
Style. That's how we do things.
You picked up on that, did you?
He was brilliant at not answering the question.
Yeah. I've been in sales long.
Yeah,
long
exactly.
Too long.
That is how we roll in
the
FDH Lounge.
I am on Rick's side.
Yes, splitting the difference, Ken. Kudos to you.